Let's turn in our Bibles to the book of Proverbs. Start with Proverbs chapter 19. I'll get to that. Lesson tonight is for fathers in particular. I think probably the majority of teaching on the family, the lesson is for fathers in particular. But we all need to hear it. Mothers need to hear it to be able to carry out the father's wishes and understand why he thinks that way. Young men need to hear it because you will be fathers someday. Young ladies need to hear it because you'll be mothers someday. Elders still need to hear it because you can validate the preaching. You can say, yep, he's right, and you can help fathers that need it. And so, as a part of what we're going to do tonight, I would like all fathers, at least fathers, to have something to write with and something to write on. And I've given the ushers just some scrap paper. If you're a father and you don't have, your wife doesn't have it, and you don't have anything to write on or with, if you'd raise your hand, I'll have the ushers pass just a few sheets of paper out to you. Tonight, in a certain sense, will be a little more like some of our institutes in the past, where I'm not going to just get up and preach a sermon. You're going to have to use a pencil and paper. Anyway, there's a few in the back row. They'll get you there. Anyone else? All right. Men, I want to scare you tonight. I want you to leave with an awful dread and fear that moves you to change the way you think about your family and how you deal with your children. I'm not going to say boo or anything like that. But I think that what we're going to speak about should change us, should move us, should really affect the way we consider our family. Let's look at Proverbs 19 and verse 18. Proverbs 19 and verse 18 says, "Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying." Now, there are a lot of different things we could speak about and think about and consider from that short verse. But what has struck me for maybe the last 6 months is the phrase, while there is hope. While there is hope. It says, "Chasten thy son while there is hope. Let not thy soul spare for his crying." This teaches us, the Bible teaches us from that phrase, that there's a period of time that there is hope. Now that's encouraging. There's a period of time that there is hope. There's a time to work with and train your children. But what that verse also says is that there comes a time when there's not hope. There'll come a time when there's not hope. Now, you could look at that. I'm not speaking of that in just a negative sense. I'm not saying that there comes a time for the bad kid. The bad kid will get so bad that there's no hope left for him. What I'm saying is that every kid grows up. And there comes a time when hope is maybe not the word, but the idea here is that time ends. Your time for training, whether it be chastening, teaching, training, or whatever, is going to end sometime. We might be able to say, you could twist it around a little bit, and we could say maybe, do not chasten thy son when there's no hope. I don't think I would say that, because who are we to be able to determine in that sense when there's no hope? Does God ever give up on anybody? And in that sense, we shouldn't, with a son that needs chastening, we should never just give up on them. But all parents chasten thy son while there's hope. All parents have a period of hopeful time. And hope ends whether a child is good or bad. Either way, the point I'm trying to make, and I hope we'll be able to get it through, is that fathers, you will not be able to train your children anymore after some point in time. Of course, you will still influence them. Okay? I'm right here. I have a father that influences me in three ways. He's father, boss, pastor. Okay? Still influences, and probably, but really, his influence is a lot more than any other father-son influence there are other sons that are working for their fathers that are pastors, okay? Not the only one in this situation, I know that. But I guess the point is, most of you fathers won't have your son as your employee. He won't be in your church. He'll just be your son, and he'll be an older man. And the time for chastening and training and teaching will be over sometime. There's another verse that teaches very familiar verses to us. Look at Proverbs 22:6. You probably don't even need to look at it, do you? Proverbs 22, verse 6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go." And for this lesson, the next words are key. "And when he is old, he will not depart from it." What is that telling us? And the point of this lesson, that's telling us that your children are going to get old. They're not going to be children someday. And when they're old, the Bible tells us we can expect, if we've done right, we can expect that when they're old, they will not depart from it. But it's also telling us they will get old. And they should be able to, when they're old, not need you there telling them what to do, telling them how to live. There's training that should be done before he is old. And if a child is trained correctly, he will not depart even without his parents there. So tonight, primarily, I'm going to speak about an ideal. We don't always talk about ideals. Lots of time we talk about practical, on the earth, what should you do in this situation, that situation. But it's good to know what the ideal is. It's good to know what the theory is sometimes in order to compare our reality with it. If we're just going along and we don't know what we should be doing, what it should be like, we don't understand how we fit in. We don't understand what we should do to fix the situation that we're in. We will just attack symptoms. If somebody has a runny nose, a Kleenex takes care of it, doesn't it? Not really. The Kleenex just takes care of the snot. Okay? The problem that's causing the snot is still there, isn't it? And so, in the same sense, a lot of us as parents, we recognize, oh, there's a problem in my kids, or there's something there. And we just deal with the problem, and we haven't thought of the big picture. We don't understand, where is that problem coming from? Where am I going with this child? We've heard preaching, we've got to spank our children. Well, spanking children, you must spank your children. But where are you going with that spanking of your children? What are you trying to accomplish with the spanking of your children? Are you just spanking them because the preacher says spank them? A lot of us, and I think that there's men here that have gone through this, and I would be honest enough if you talked to them, a lot of us have just spanked our kids, and we didn't have the big picture in mind, and our kids still went bad. We didn't spank them consistently. We didn't know what we were doing with it. And you could tell stories about times you beat your kid, but your kid is not faithful to the Lord anymore. And all that's to say that just spanking certain times isn't going to make your kid turn out right. There's more to it. You've got to know where you're going. You've got to understand what your purpose as a father is. You are training a child in the way he should go so that when he's old, he won't depart from it. You're not just doing a certain thing. You're not just having family devotions every morning and spanking your children. It all fits into a bigger picture than that. We must understand the big picture, the overview, to be able to see where we fit or where we don't fit in. I'm a teacher, okay, and I'm an educator. I'm a doctor of education. So I study these types of things. A teacher will be a good teacher if he knows the whole subject that he's going to teach. Some of you all went to school, and the teacher that, when you came in, the teacher that picked up his notebook and said, well, where were we yesterday? And just kind of went through note by note by note, and then when the bell rang, he stopped, and you closed your notebook, and then the next day, he opened his notebook up and said, well, where did we stop yesterday? And he just kind of went. He was just going. He was just doing whatever. He didn't know where he was going. You didn't learn much from him. The teacher that came in each day and had something every day to give you, not just the next five lines in his notebook or not the next three pages in his notebook. He had something to give you each day. You learned from him. And the same way with you as a father. You can't just go day by day saying, well, I haven't spanked him in a few days. I know we don't think that way, but we do think mechanically. We think, oh, I got to do this, and I got to do this, and I got to do this, and I got to do this. And it's just like going line by line. We don't understand the big picture. We don't know what we're doing with our children. We're too concerned about ourselves or something, and we don't do what's necessary to make our children, to build our children into something that's ready to stand on their own someday. The Bible teaches us, these verses in particular, but the Bible teaches us, and we know, you know it's true just by my saying it, that you have a certain amount of time to train your children. You have a certain amount of time to train your children. And after that, it's too late. After that, it's too late. Now, I'm not saying when that time is. I can't say that it's when they turn 30 or when they turn 15 or when they're 12 or 17 or 18 or 21. You know, the world gives us levels. You know, when you're 21, you're allowed to legally buy booze. When you're 18, you're allowed to legally, what, buy cigarettes. You can. When you're 16, you're allowed to legally drive. The world has all kinds of ages or whatever, but I'm not going to give an age. But the truth is still true that at some point, your time for training will be over. The active training that you're going to do, it's true. Now, I believe that there's a different amount of time given to us for the different things we must teach our children. Let me give you an example. I think all of us would agree that our children need to learn what we've been taught to understand is voice obedience. Voice obedience means, well, it means that this child, as soon as you say something, they do it without question, without hesitation. And also, it means that they hear you say it, regardless of whether they're playing or not. Of course, I don't mean that you whisper in the corner and spank them for not listening. But voice obedience means that if a child is upstairs and you say, Pastor Whitaker says, Elijah, come down here. He hears it and he comes down immediately. Doesn't matter whether what he's doing. That's what voice obedience means. We've been taught that our children should know that and obey in that way. And it's true. You have a relatively short amount of time to teach your children that. Now, I'm going to just use experience. I'm not going to use the Bible to prove that to you. But if you don't teach that to your children by the time they're 10, try starting when they're 10. You won't do it. Or some of us, we laugh, we make excuses for them when they're 2 and 3. And we don't make them obey. We don't teach them voice obedience. And finally, when they're 13 and 14, we say, I've got this problem on my hands. He's a rebel. And then what do you try to do? You say, well, he's a rebel. He's got to learn obedience. And then he really rebels. He runs away. He says, forget you. He does whatever. Because you only had a certain amount of time to teach him voice obedience. Now, we'll come back to that later. But you see the point? Different things that we need to teach our children. It's not like we can say, well, I have 18 years or I have 20 years to teach my children, and I'm just going to let them do whatever they want. And then when we get to be about 17 and they're really smart and we can converse well, then I'm going to teach them everything he needs to know in the last 3 years. You don't know whether it's 17 or 18 or 20 or whatever. And the different things that we need to teach them, we have different amounts of time to get that across to them. It will be too late. There will be no hope of getting that across to them after a certain point in time. And this is where this is not practical. I can't tell you how many days that you have for each of the little things that you must teach your children. But you better get at it right now, because there comes a time when you're not going to have a chance. Now, with that in mind, I want to tell you, I had this whole idea of while there's hope as a burden to my heart for a long time. And then a book came across my desk and I read it. And it was written by a Christian. And I want to tell you what his goals were for his children. And I want to tell them to you because I think you're going to be surprised by them. But let's listen to this. This man said that for his children, by their senior year in high school, he wanted them to be making all their own rules. Their senior year in high school, they wanted to make their own rules. They would decide when their curfew was. They would decide where they went, when they wanted to go there. They would choose whatever friends they wanted without the parents saying anything about who their friends were. They would be their own censor. A senior in high school would be their own censor, meaning they would decide whether a book was worth reading or not worth reading, whether a movie was worth going to or not going to, or for that matter, whether a film was worth watching or not watching, whether they like certain music or they don't like certain music. All of that he wanted them to be able to do on their own in their senior year of high school. By their junior year in high school, they would manage their money totally themselves in this way. Their allowance, he would give their junior in high school allowance that would cover everything except for food and housing. Of course, they were going to live in his house still, and mom was still going to make meals. But everything else, clothes, whatever, anything that the child needed, he would have. And in the summer before the junior year, he would prepare a budget. Then, going into junior year, that summer, parents and upcoming junior would discuss the budget, talk it over, make sure it seemed right. And then from that time on, the allowance, they would just give them whatever it was, weekly, monthly, give them a plop of money, and they would have that money. And then thirdly, to really put some oomph to it, he said by the time that his children would be driver's license age, they would be in their own car. A car is an expensive thing, so parents would go 50-50 with it. And insurance for young people is expensive too, so parents would go 50-50 with that. But beside that, everything else about the car, they would pay for. They'd buy their own gas. They would do their own repairs and all of that. Now, you think about that. That sounds like a crazy man, doesn't it? To us today. A senior that just does whatever he wants. A junior that you just give him a bunch of money and let him do whatever he wants with it. Somebody that's 16 years old that can drive a car and go wherever he wants. You say, how foolish. And I would never do that. I want you to think about something. I want you to think, what if? Let's say that we're not in America. Or maybe we are in America and it's 50 years from now. And the government has this goofy thing that they say, you raise your children until they're 17 and then we're taking them. And we're going to pay them. We're going to give them transportation. and we're going to let them live however we think is okay. I say that wouldn't happen. How many of you have ever heard of and even think it's not that bad of an idea of certain states, certain countries that require every boy to enter the army at the age of 18? You've heard of that. It's not that far-fetched, is it, to say that the government would take your children at a certain age and they would be paid, they would have transportation, they would be able to live however the government or whoever wants to say they can. Now, let's say you're in that country, and now's when you're going to use your paper. Father, what would you do? What would you change? What would you teach your son, your daughter? How would you train them if you knew that at 18 years old, you would have no more influence over them? Now's the time to use your paper and your pen. You have rules in your house? What would you teach them about those rules? Entertainment, sleep, standards, money, credit, work, responsibility, budgets, real life, loving God, obeying God, serving God. Can you think about that? I'm going to be quiet for a minute. It'll feel like 5 minutes. Write some things down. What would you change? Didn't know a minute could feel so long, did you? Now, here's where I'm going to... I hope this scares you. God has told you to do that. Now, God hasn't said that it's 18. But God has said, chasten thy son while there's hope. There comes a time when you won't have any more significant influence over them. Might not be 17, might not be 32. I don't know the age. But those things that you said you'd change, let's do them. Let's do it now. There is a time when hope... Or there's a point when time is gone, when you don't have any more time, and it's when they're old. Now, what are some instructions and examples maybe? With this in mind, your child's life should gradually change from living in a totalitarian state to living in complete self-government. Your child's life should gradually change from living in a totalitarian state, in your home is a totalitarian state, to living in complete self-government. Now, you might disagree with me that they should have complete self-government in your home. But it shouldn't be a big difference between going from your home to being married and living in complete self-government. Now, what is self-government? What do I mean by complete self-government? Self-government is not licentiousness. Self-government isn't that I can do whatever I want. Self-government is spirit-controlled liberty. Okay? Your goal is to train your child in such a way so that they are not governed by you, but they're governed by the Spirit of God and the Word of God. So, but along the way, you will not know, honestly, you will not know if you're training them correctly if in your home it's totalitarianism up to the day they should be self-governed. If you're controlling every single aspect of their life, and they have to do this, and they have to do that, and they have to do that, and then they get married, they won't even know how to be a husband. But they won't. You won't know whether you're doing your job. You won't know. It has to be a gradual change. There has to be times when you give them leash, and you test yourself and them. You test your teaching and their learning as to whether they're responsible. Now, so you won't know that. They also will not learn self-government if they've never had any external government. Okay? You can't say, well, I want them to be self-governed, so I'll just let them do whatever they want. They're created by God. They're made in God's image, and they're good people. They're a good person. My kid would never do anything wrong. You just let him do whatever he wants, because someday I'm not going to be able to tell him what to do. That won't work either. And we recognize that from the way I say that. But we need to live it that way. And it's we must gradually change from controlling everything in their life to the point where they're ready to live on their own, under God, of course. Now, so that's the big picture, men. That's the big picture. That's what you're trying to accomplish in your life, in your children's lives. You're trying to get them to where they can stand on their own feet with the Word of God and live like a Christian should. And each of your children is somewhere along the way. And somewhere out there is a point when you won't be able to really influence them anymore along that way. Where are you? What are you doing? How are they responding? How are they growing? Now, here's another area. Another area, and this is, to me, truly biblical. Your child should be able to converse about spiritual matters with other people as a young teenager. Your child should be able to converse with other people, adults, about spiritual matters as a young teenager. Turn over to the book of Luke. Luke chapter 2. Luke chapter 2, verse 46 says, "And it came to pass that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. And all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers." Who are we speaking of? Jesus Christ. And Christ is our example. Christ is our example. Our children. How many of you have a 12-year-old that you feel comfortable could sit in a room with Pastor Whitaker and Mr. Armacost and have a spiritual conversation with them? That's what Jesus was doing. Now, just my observation would be that this will never happen with your children if you don't converse about this around them and with them. If you're not talking about spiritual matters with your wife in front of your children, they won't know about spiritual matters. They won't know how people talk about spiritual matters. If you don't talk with them about spiritual matters, they won't know how to converse with other people about spiritual matters. And you know what? You better start before they're 12. Because when Jesus was 12, he was able to do it without his parents around. Nobody was coaching him as far as what to say. He was listening to them and asking them questions. And he's an example to us. We need to nurture a spiritual life and spiritual conversations in our children. It's not fake. You don't have to be fake. Let's just be real. Talk with them about the things that make that are really real to us in our lives. And I will say, I'm not saying you don't need to have family devotions, but you're not going to accomplish this in family devotions. You're not. Family devotions is to a child very much like going to church. It's a certain time when we do a spiritual thing. It's kind of scripted. We do this, you know, we read the Bible, and then we sing a song or whatever, and then we memorize a verse, and then this, and then sometimes Dad teaches us. But that's like going to Sunday school. It's not like sitting around and talking about real life on the ground spirituality. How do we accomplish this? I don't know for sure, but I think we have to have a transparent spirituality. Our lives need to be transparent. If you're not spiritual, then your child's not going to know how to speak about spiritual things. And if you're not spiritual, you can't manufacture a spiritual conversation if you're not spiritual yourself. But you do need to have purposeful conversations with your children on an individual basis and as a family. Now, I think, and I'm sure somebody could take what I'm saying and say, well, we're going to have family devotions, and then I'm going to do this at dinner time all the time. Well, and it not accomplish what I'm saying. But I think a very important time for families to learn about on-the-ground practical Christianity is at dinner, or sometime when you're eating. Or eating just seems like the easiest time for this to happen, in my mind. Dad, you're not with your family all day. But if you're anything like me, I shouldn't even say it that way. I'm not trying to put myself up as an example. But I think a good spiritual dad is thinking about and conversing with his family all day long. You're at work, you're doing whatever, and you're thinking, I wonder what Billy's doing in school today. I need to ask him about that. Now, and then you're thinking, if he's had a hard time with this, if he says this, I need to teach him that. If he says this, I need to talk to him about that. I need to point out that the Bible teaches us this here. You're having conversations with your children. I'm not trying to be spooky, not demonic. I'm just saying in your mind, you're thinking, you're rehearsing what you're trying to accomplish with your children all the time. You're thinking about, these children are your responsibility. Now, your wife feeds them and clothes them and disciplines them when they step out of line. But the big picture is yours. And you're thinking about all the different aspects of their life. And you're looking for opportunities on purpose. You might even make opportunities on purpose to talk to them about this topic and that topic and that topic and that topic. And relate those topics to how a Christian thinks about that, how a Christian applies the Bible to this situation and that situation. You need to purposefully have conversations with them. Some of those will be individually, but most of them are going to be in the context of your family. Everybody needs to hear the teaching that you're going to give most of the time. So while you're not with the family all day, you're thinking about them. You're concentrating and you're praying about that situation and that situation. And then when the time comes, you make dinner is not about putting food in your belly. Dinner is about seeing the spiritual condition of your family and nurturing that spirituality. Now, then, you say, but I haven't been ideal. I haven't been ideal. Don't give up. Don't give up. This is my third thing. I would say with teens, recognize that they're Christians. Now, we could use that term loosely, or I'm using that term loosely. Maybe they're not saved, but probably they are. But in a sense, I'm saying recognize that they've grown up here at church. They know what should happen and what shouldn't happen. If they're not saved, it might be because they know you're not what you should be. And if you'd get right, they'd get saved. But let me just say this. You get to a point, you have teenagers, and you say, well, Pastor Vogelin said, and this is really why I actually asked Pastor Darren to take the teens. I don't want them coming back to you saying, Pastor Vogelin said that it should, you know, rules should get looser as I get to be 16 and 17-year-old. That's true. There should be a lot less rules in the house for your 17-year-old than there is for your 12-year-old and than there is for your 5-year-old. But that's not for them to tell you. Okay? That's for me to tell you. But let's say you got a teenager that needs a lot of rules. Well, that means you've sinned against them. You haven't trained them in the way they should go. And if you've sinned against them, the Bible says you need their forgiveness. If you admit how you've been wrong and why things will be different, say, this has been wrong, I've been wrong, and this is why things will be different, because I'm making it right, you'll have less chance of a rebellious outbreak. And if you treat that present situation biblically, then, only if you treat the present situation biblically, can you beg God for mercy. But if you just go on and say, well, whatever, God promises to Christians, God promises to faithful people that their children will turn out for Him. But if we're unfaithful, we can't claim those promises as unfaithful Christians. If we become faithful later, and God has had mercy over and over and over and over again, but we can't presume. We must repent and then beg for God's mercy. Make all decisions with the big picture in mind, not just the current symptoms. You have a 13-year-old and that's a 15-year-old that's doing something stupid. Don't just nail the symptom. There's a big picture problem behind it that you need to deal with. It's going to start with yourself and then with your family and then with the boy or the girl, if it's that way. Now, I really am not an experienced expert, that's for sure. But I know what the Bible says, and I think that this is, it's made a big difference in my own life, just in my own thinking, and I hope it has for you, that we recognize that there comes a time when we're not going to be able to really train the way we can now. Now, we used to do this, and I hope it's okay to do it again. Is there any area that I've talked about that you think, what did he really mean by that? I know sometimes I could say things and not be real clear, or somebody get the wrong idea about it. And so, like I say, I'm not an experienced expert, but if there's any clarification or questions that would need answered, I'd appreciate them. If there's not, we'll just stop. And you might say, well, I feel like stopping. But if there's any questions or clarifications of what I've said, would you raise your hand and I'll try to answer those. See, now that's bad. I just leave thinking I'm the world's greatest teacher. Everybody understood exactly what I said. All right, that's all I have.
We haven't had questions in this class forever, but I know the feeling. I ask my college class, are there any questions? No. Any questions? Oh, they're all brilliant. They have all the answers. If I can get one to start going, just like today, all of a sudden, question, makes a good class. But you know what he was saying is what you've heard me say since my kids have left the home. In different ways, I've said, you know, I didn't do all I could. Now, the reason I say that is because it's over. Even if I'm his boss, even though I'm his pastor and all the rest of that, he's a grown man. My girls are married, and I can influence them, but I can't teach them. That time is over. Okay, I don't have the influence as a child, and that's why I warn you, younger people, that there come a time where you say, "I didn't do everything I could have," and you kick yourself. Okay. because it's just what was taught today. Make sure you do everything you can as a kid. Everything he taught about tonight, I'm thinking about as I raised him. Prayer request.